Turn your radio on.
This is a download from Triple J.
Australia's national youth network. On radio,
on TV,
and online.
For more music, current affairs, comedy, and culture,
triplej.net.au.
And now...
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Zan.
And you can, involve yourself in a number of ways. Best way, if you've got a question, is to call us. We just take questions through TalkBack, 1-300-055-36. If you've got an answer or a comment, though, and you can't get through on the phone, you can tweet at Dr. Carl, D-O-C-T-O-R-K-A-R-L, or you can leave a message on the forum. There's a special Dr. Carl thread there at triplej.net.au. What's going on in the world of science this week? Crazy weather around the country at the moment.
Weather is interesting. People are still being climate skeptics, and one day soon we might even get some of our energy from renewables. Don't break my heart. Let's go to the audience.
Okay. If you've got a question for us, do give us a buzz. 1-300-055-36. Nick in Sutherland does. Good morning, Nick.
Morning, Zan. Dr. Carl, how are you doing?
Very well. What's your question?
Cool. Basically, I saw this little travel documentary about some guys who went back to Chernobyl and a couple of nearby towns. Basically, they're talking to a guy and some people who lived around there, basically saying that the firefighters, mostly doctors in the area, were drunk and that they beat, you know, most of the effects of radioactivity. Just wondering if there's a real connection.
No. Really, you don't want to be drunk when anything serious is happening. For example, when I do talks, I never have a drink beforehand. I always like a drink afterwards, especially with a little umbrella in it. What you can do is take potassium iodide. Your thyroid gland in your throat is always taking up iodine. And in nuclear reactor accidents, such as at Chernobyl, one of the things that it threw out was radioactive iodine, which your body would take up and then incorporate into the thyroid gland. So all nuclear reactor sites have around them lots of doctors with potassium iodide. And so if there's a radiation leak, you immediately take way too much iodine. You saturate your thyroid gland, so therefore your thyroid gland will not take up the iodine. The iodine will then come in through your lungs and be going to your bloodstream and then just go straight out again. It will not be taken up into your thyroid gland. So the potassium iodide tablets are the only protection of that sort that I know of against radiation. I remember reading something in the RadSafe handout that comes out all the time, and I can't remember what it is, but alcohol, no. Sorry, I think they lied to you on that one, Dr.
Oh, damn.
Thanks for the
Sorry,
call
Dr.
anyway, Nick.
Cheers.
Cody in Perth, good morning.
Hello.
Hello. What's your question?
My question is that my sister gets condensation on her nose after putting on moisturiser, but sometimes it'll only show up about 30 minutes after she puts it on. For example, when we're on the train on the way to work in the mornings. And it doesn't happen every time that she puts on moisturiser either. I'm wondering why.
It's definitely not tears rolling down the inside?
No, it's like on the end of her nose, like on the tip of her nose or on the bridge of her nose.
Is it sweat?
Is it sweat? Look, what we need...
But it even happens in winter, so I'm not sure.
No idea on that one.
Has she tried different moisturisers to see if they react in different ways?
Yeah, she's tried heaps and it all happens.
Mm. Really? That's a good science investigative question there. You could be a forensic scientist.
Thanks, Dr. Carl. I am a doctor for 1 hour a week, remember? Maybe we need a dermatologist to let us know if this is something that's happened before.
Somebody in the beauty trade, because they would see all this stuff happening all the time. If it's common.
We'll see if we can get an answer for you. If you do want to call and help out Cody, 1-300-055-36, or hit us up on the forum or Dr. Carl's Twitter. We'll see if we can find out before the hour's out, Cody.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. See ya.
Bye.
David in Sydney, good morning.
G'day, Dr. Zan and Dr. Carl. How you doing?
Very well, Dr. David.
My theory is, or question is, in regards to golf balls, what if you use that technology in regards to motor racing vehicles and, every day general normal vehicle going up and down the highway with the dimple technology? If you didn't have that dimple technology on a golf ball, the golf ball wouldn't travel as far, right?
Yes, right. It'd go only 50 metres and it can go up to 300. In other words, a six times increase thanks to the dimples which they discovered in Scotland, that the older, more battered golf balls would travel further than the newer, shiny,
unbattered
ones.
Oh, that's how they discovered it. Okay. So in cars and planes, would it make a difference? I mean, cars and planes have got engines, golf balls don't.
You do want to save energy. What would work on aeroplanes is special, what they call riblet, R-I-B-L-E-T tape, which was made by the 3M company and other companies, but they were the ones who made the riblet tape. And if you put it on the skin of the aeroplanes, even though it's slightly ripply, It does make the resistance less. The trouble is that the maintenance of it is high because the little tiny ribbles fill up with dirt and they're no longer there, so then you've got to scrape them clean with a brush, so it's not worth it. With cars, it wouldn't work because they're travelling at different regimes. They're not a circular object that's small. They're rather a large object that's being pushed through the air, and they've gone to enormous trouble. And so with certain hybrid cars, they've reduced the CD down to 0.25 from 0.26, which is a big change because you cube it to get the improvement in fuel economy. And they've done stupid things like putting a little curve here and a little dent there. So the dimples would not work on cars. They work on golf balls. They do not work on cars.
Hey, thanks for the call, David.
No, thank you.
See you later. Luke in Adelaide, good morning.
Morning, how you going?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
I used to do a lot of rowing, and one thing I noticed when you were rowing was that you, sometime after I'd been past a particular area of water, there'd be like a trail, almost like a miniature oil slick behind the boat, and you could see it for quite some time after. I've noticed that on bigger boats as well. And I'm just wondering why you can see where a boat's been through water.
Oh. I'm just remembering something from the movie Apollo 13, where he's talking about an experience of his in Vietnam War, and he's flying in the Tonkin Gulf, and suddenly all the electronics on his plane die, and the only reason that the engine is running is because it's still running, and he doesn't have a compass, he doesn't have anything, and he's lost all of his lights, and he thinks, I'm stuffed, I'm low on fuel, I've got no idea, I can run a plane because I can run a mechanical things, I don't know where anything is, and so he's flying in the total dark, and his eyes begin to adjust to the dark, and then suddenly he sees this trail, and there's a trail of phosphorescence behind the aircraft carrier, and he follows it straight home and then lands on the aircraft carrier without any power, without any electrics. And the only reason he could see that was because he had lost all of his lights in the cabin and his eyes got dark adapted. So yes, there is something that happens behind boats, little boats like your rowing boats and big boats like aircraft carriers.
And it's beyond the actual turbulence. It's something that's like a slick left behind.
It's a flattened area.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I can understand why you'd have turbulence. Maybe because you've got the air. I can hear the circuit ducking. Is it ducking all the time in the background? Are you hearing a ducking circuit?
It's strange. It's very strange. I think there's something weird going on.
Okay,
in
something
the phone.
weird is technical. Okay, so I can understand the water moving. So maybe I can't think fast enough. I think because the water is moving slowly in the track behind the boat, be it small or large, that stops the wind ripples, which causes all the little chop, from showing itself. I don't like that theory, but it's the best I can come up with at short notice.
Hey, Luke, I've
done heaps of experiments with my... Because if you do it like in a bath, I've got four little kids, so if you do it in a small area in a bath, you can't see it, but as soon as you get to a decent-sized body of water, you can.
Hmm. What do you think of my theory that you've got the water moving slowly and that stops little tiny ripples from making their presence felt? Not a very good theory, is it?
Oh, I don't know. You're the doctor, mate.
No, don't trust authority. Trust nature. I don't like my theory very well. I haven't come up with a good answer. We're hoping somebody
comes up
with something.
Yeah, listen up. We might get some more theories through the hour. Thanks for the call, Luke.
Thank you, Dr. Luke.
See you later. Good morning, Daniel.
How are you going?
Good, thanks. Calling in from Port Broughton. What's your question?
We're working in the wind farms right now, which are green energy. They create AC electricity. On the flip side, you've got solar, which creates DC. What I want to know is how can we create AC electricity from sunlight, because sunlight travels in a waveform.
Ah, in the case of the wind, what you've got is you've got a tuning between the length of the blades, the width of the blades, the speed you want to rotate at, whether it's a multiple of 50, the gearbox, and so you've got yourself something that's automatically turning, moving one lump of metal relative to another, so you're automatically making AC.
That's
with DC, if you go and look it up either in Wikipedia or How Stuff Works, you'll see that what you're doing is you're gradually pulling electrons out one at a time. Electron, 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 electrons go this way, electron holes go the other way, so what you're getting is an AC. You then have to get in an inverter to turn it from DC to AC. It's inherent in the mechanics of how the solar cell works that you do get DC off it.
Does that make sense, Daniel?
We're stuck
sure.
With it.
So how can we produce AC from sunlight, given that it travels almost AC waveform anyway?
Well, hang on, that's irrelevant. All that matters is that you're producing DC at the cell. Then you have to do a fancy electronics via a thing called an inverter.
Trying to improve efficiency, just the slightest, littlest bit, trying to improve efficiency.
Well, you do lose efficiency when you're turning the DC into AC, but you know how the solar cells work and how they make the electricity with the holes and everything and the electrons going this way?
Yeah, I'm a solar installer also.
I don't think you can make them give AC instantly. I think that you need to think about this. That's a brilliant idea. If you can get the solar cells, if you can have different configurations or you have phase timing or something so that you in some way have different layers of cells, they're giving out their electricity at different times, you phase shift it, and if you can bypass the inverter, you're going to get a few more. You're exactly right. You're going to get more efficiency. I don't know how to do it, but I can see that it's not, well, it's fairly close to impossible, but it's not impossible.
We need some really, really good scientists on it.
Well, you need, now that you've put the question, all you have to do is apply coffee, pizza, lab coats and late nights and money, and it might be possible to get an answer.
Hey, Daniel, I like that you've brought this up. Would you like a JMAG for your efforts?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, sure, that'd be excellent.
It's a brand new one. Arctic Monkeys are on the cover, and we can send you out one to have a little break from your scientific discoveries that could be on the horizon for you. Thanks for the call, Daniel.
Can I send out an I love you, and I know you love me back to Leon?
I think you just did.
Thank you so much.
Good on you, Daniel.
Bye.
Stay on the line. We'll get you details. Hey, just before that song, Dr. Carr, we were talking about why there's that slick, not turbulence, but slick behind boats when they're travelling in the water. A couple of people have texted in their responses. Dan in Brisbane reckons that it's caused by unburnt fuel and oil in the exhaust from the engine, which is dispersed underwater beyond the turbulence created by the propeller. And Lincoln McLean in Mount Martha reckons that it has something to do with boat's waves caused in its wake and its displacement of tons of water.
Okay, firstly, there's definitely something happening with the oil on the water if you've got a crappy four-stroke instead of a nice new four-stroke, a crappy two-stroke instead of a new two-stroke or a nice four-stroke. But what about in rowboats? Okay, so it definitely happens behind boats when you row them. That's what he said. You're getting it behind. Luke said that. And what was that last theory? You've got the turbulence. You're creating a small amount of turbulence in the water, which might overcome
something to do with the boat's waves caused in its wake and its displacement with tons of water.
It displaces water, but then why does it leave a curious flatness behind the water? Don't know.
Curious flatness is a good name for a band.
Oh,
think about
okay.
it. Thank you for those answers. Texted in Ronnie in the Blue Mountains. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I have a question about. Okay, well, it starts off when I was really young, like in primary school, I got into a fight with this girl and I got so mad and I got so angry, and just before I lashed out at her, I believe that I saw red. And this happened once again to me when I was a teenager. All I did was kick a chair in my anger, but I was so angry that I believe for a split second I did see a flush of red. I'm wondering if that is possible, because you read it in books, oh, the warrior as he went off to war and, you know, his red haze of battle fury or whatever, and I'm wondering, is that possible? Can you see red?
I think you should be able to, because in your eyeball, roughly the size of a golf ball, 25 millimetres or 1 inch in diameter, you have a retina. It's 0.3 of a millimetre thick, turns light into electricity and then into vision. The blood cells that feed it are in front of the vision cells. And you're saying, hang on, you're saying that the red bloods, the blood vessels that supply the blood to the retina are in front of the viewing cells, in front of the cones. How come you don't see them? Well, you can if you close your eyes and then stare at the sun. You can see this network. Normally, you electronically filter them out. So if you have more of the blood vessels opening up, because you've got lots of blood vessels that are closed down, if you have more of them opening up, then maybe in areas where you don't normally have them open, then the blood vessels open up. And for a brief instant, before your eye electronically filters out the red blood vessels, then you are seeing red. And because they're so close, you're seeing them as a general red fuzz. I don't know. I think that seems the best sort of answer. We'd need an ophthalmologist or an optometrist to tell us if that is possibly correct.
Okay, we'll see if we can find out for sure for you, Ronnie. Thanks for the call.
Thank you,
Dr. Ronnie.
See you later. Scott in Adelaide, good morning.
Morning, doctors.
Hello, what's your question?
I'm a taekwondo instructor, and a part of our training, we teach patterns, which are a sequence of self-defense techniques. So there's usually around about roughly 30 per pattern. So normally you'll do a few moves left and then right, and then forwards and then backwards, and then finish in the same position. But I've noticed and experienced it myself that if you change the direction where you're starting from, the whole sequence can get messed up and you can't really remember what you're doing. And I was wondering why that might be.
You mean if you go clockwise rather than anti-clockwise, or do you mean using the left side of your body instead of the right side of your body?
Most of the training centres, the students always face the same way when they do their patterns. Mm-hmm. So when I was learning my patterns, I always faced west. That's just the way the training centres faced.
Mm-hmm.
When I started instructing, the hall that I was instructing in was facing east. So when I was trying to teach the students the new patterns, I was completely confused just because I was facing a different direction. So the pattern and the sequence stays the same. And I noticed even last night that I got some of my students to begin their pattern facing a different direction, you know, north, south, east or west, and most of them got quite confused.
Dr. Gale?
All I can think of is that you, Scott, I'm picking on you now, Scott, and your students have not yet reached full enlightenment. Because if you are fully enlightened in your Taekwondo instructing, you should be able to do it in any direction and not be influenced negatively by a background. And the fact that you are influenced by the background means that you're not fully self-centered and able to be a giant in your own self. You should be independent of your background and be able to deliver in all directions. So this shows, Scott, that you... I'm just making this up as I go along.
Oh, way to take the wind out of Scott's sails.
That you... No, the point is that you have recognized this. And realize, most people live in a fuzz and have no idea of what's happening around them. You have realized this and now you can do something about it
so
and become even...
light at the end of the tunnel.
And become more wise and more enlightened.
Can you give us a call when you have the breakthrough, Scott?
If we're all still around.
Yeah, and the other thing is that I think...
Come on, have faith.
Yeah, and it's good to make the students do it in different directions because that will teach them to be able to work in a wider range of hostile environments.
Yeah.
That is very good of you.
Hey, thanks for the call, Scott.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Truly wise.
Earlier we were talking about solar cells. Dale in Melbourne's got an answer. Hello, Dale.
Hello, Dale.
What are your thoughts?
Well, what you're looking at is solar cells are a string of diodes flattened out, and they're in an array.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you can't actually get AC out of a diode, just mainly because it'll only allow electricity to flow one direction.
That's right. But suppose you phase it so that you, over 1/50th of a second, you've got some coming earlier, some coming later, and then you can create an artificial waveform where it's higher and lower and higher and lower. So you might not be able to get AC, positive and negative, but you can get up and down, up and down.
Yeah, but then you'd have to have two different solar panels, one going in one direction, one going in the other.
Yeah.
And that's a waste of half.
Well, you don't waste it. You just marry the two halves. So you've got the positive cycle and the negative cycle. What we're trying to do is work out a way to not have the inverter, which is almost impossible. But if somebody can think it through, man, it'd be a brilliant thing.
Hey, thanks for your thoughts, Dale.
But, you're exactly right. It is a string of diodes shoved together. You did right.
Angus in Sydney has got a great question. Good morning, Angus.
Good morning, Dr. Zan. Good morning, Dr. Carl.
Hello.
Dr.
What's yours?
Well, firstly, just love your show. It's a great hour of radio for me in the morning, and unfortunately I get nothing done as a result morning.
It goes for three hours, but, you know, that's okay. Every day.
The hour with science is just a fantastic hour. Anyway, look, my question would hopefully resonate a bit with Triple J, but I'm just asking about the Humble LP. The piece of plastic that has a little groove through it, you pop a hollow needle in it with a little funnel at the end and somehow you're able to create the richness of a Mozart symphony. How does LP work?
Yeah, I'm wondering about this too. I've never thought about it. It's one of those things you take for granted.
We did mention a few weeks ago that the world's most expensive record player is available for $109,000 and that record sales are doubling each year. Still a long way behind CD sales, but CD sales are dropping. People do claim there's a different sound. I've got a record player I resurrected out of the roof and blow me down. It does sound a little different and warmer and nicer. With the needle, there are two vibrations. There's one left-right and there's one up-down.
Right.
And so you're having physical, mechanical movement of the needle. And then that then gets translated to a diaphragm, which moves backwards and forwards and gives you the sound that you originally heard. Because in the old days, they just have a big diaphragm and the sound of the orchestra would then land on the diaphragm. It would vibrate, joined to the middle of it would be a long lever arm, and the lever arm would be joined to a fine needle, a diamond, which would then cut a groove in softish plastic. All you're doing is reversing that process. So it's hard to believe that a bunch of vibrations in plastic are a pretty accurate representation of sound waves landing on your eardrum, but they are.
I mean, look, that's obviously the answer, but I'm still confused because how do you get foreground sound, background sound? I mean, how did they get the level of detail, let's say in 1850, that you wouldn't be getting 0.1 of a millimetre difference in a groove somewhere along the line, which would totally distort the sound? Or, I mean, just the complexity still.
The quality was very low in the early days, and you went through various generations of cylinders of wax, and then into flat discs of wax, and then into finer and finer grooves, and better plastic that was harder. And I do believe that it's some... this is when I was last involved with Hi-Fi and records, that people were saying that you shouldn't play a record more than once every half hour because the plastic would then be damaged by your running the needle through it so soon afterwards. So all you got to do to get the background noise is to be able to record finer, record softer background variations, and that technology just kept on coming on as you went into the 70s and the 80s and probably fell over by the mid-80s as the records reached their peak. The CD started coming in the mid-80s.
People still love records, though. Thanks for the call, Dale.
No worries.
I mean, sorry, Angus.
Angus.
No, that's great. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Angus.
See you later.
Dale is who we're going to next from Pakenham. Good morning, Dale.
Morning, doctors. Morning. My question is, I used to work as a vehicle detailer at a rather large car yard. So I'd walk around with a hands-free wireless head... just a hands-free radio loop in my ears all day. And the static generated when I had opened a car didn't shock me on the fingers when I touched the car. It would shock me in the ear through the radio headset. I was just wondering why it would do that and how potentially dangerous it would be.
Hey, and tell me more about this static. So you had a little MP3 player.
Mobile phone. I was climbing in and out of cars all day, so the new plastic on the seats generate a static charge.
So you had a mobile phone in your shirt pocket and in a wire leading to one or both ears?
Both
of you. So you had a wire, and most of the time it was not playing music, it was just sitting there, and every now and then somebody would ring and you'd hit a button and you could talk to them.
Yeah.
Okay, so now what happened with the static?
Instead of being statically shocked by the car on my finger when I touched the car, it would happen in my ear when I touched the car.
So you'd get a static shock when you're walking into these cars, which have got, you were probably wearing synthetic clothes and there were synthetic seats. So you're sliding into the synthetic seat. I imagine it'd be worse in winter when it's drier.
Yeah.
And then unlike the normal situation where you get a static boot on your finger, you're getting it in your ear.
Yeah.
Where did you hold the phone? Was it on a belt pack? Was it in your pocket? Was it in
your shirt? In my pocket, in my pants.
Okay. And... what sort of trousers were they? Were they synthetic or were they fabric?
Denim.
They were denim. Well, that's not denim's not a synthetic.
Mm. Did you have spandex undies on?
Good point. Synthetic socks?
You wouldn't tell us, though, if you did, would you?
Maybe it's the sort of denim that would build up a static. Can you get static off denim?
I've had little shocks from my MP3 player's headphones because the edges are kind of wearing off and I think there's some dodgy wires that are exposed and it's really dangerous. But I've had a little shock before from those. Is the earpiece intact? Does it look pretty? Has it been happening from when it was a new earpiece?
Yeah, it was a brand new phone, so it really confused me, and I was wondering whether I should stop doing it.
I reckon we should put it out to the audience.
Yes.
Has anybody else had this happen? If they have, give us a call on 1300 055 36 or tweet at Dr. Carl or leave a note for us if you're in front of a computer on the Triple J forum. We'll see if it's a common occurrence, Dale, and let you know before the hour's out.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Dale.
Thank you.
See ya. Barry in Austin Mere. Good morning. Hi,
Dr. Barry, welcome to the show. Have you got a question or an answer for us?
Yes. My question's about heat pumps. I've heard that you can heat a house and also heat hot water with them, and I was just wondering how they worked.
A heat pump is something that moves heat from one area to another. They normally have a range of temperatures that they work most efficiently at. A refrigerator is a heat pump because it takes heat that's inside the fridge and puts it outside. And in fact, you can then run the heat pump of the refrigerator backwards and transfer heat into the fridge. And for various reasons, which I won't go into, heat pumps are a more efficient way of heating up a house than, for example, just running electric radiators.
So would they work like in like a snow condition?
They tend not to work well below minus five. You've got to have easily accessible heat to drag inside, but they'll be able to work at plus 10 and then heat up the house working from a plus 10 source, which is a cold winter's night in Sydney.
Mm.
So they're actually just using like a compressor to make the heat?
Yeah, they're just a fridge running backwards. Or, yeah, that's right, if you sit around outside a fridge, you'll get warm.
Hey, thanks for the call, Barry.
Okay, thank you.
See you later. Henry in Sydney, good morning.
Good morning, doctors.
Having a bit of a vomit lately?
Yeah, a little bit.
What's going on?
My question is, I'm another rower. My question is about when you push yourself particularly hard when you're working out or exercising and you end up vomiting at the end of it. Why does that happen?
Yeah, I've had this happen before too.
And rowers exercise. Especially because in boxing or in martial arts,
yep.
Your bout of activity is 3 minutes and you're working flat out, and by the end of that time, you're rooted. In rowing, you'll be working for 6 to 7 minutes. You're working twice as long. And when my son and my daughter were in rowing, you would see it from time to time. They would finish their 6 to 7 metre row and then they'd be busy vomiting over the edge into the water.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. It does happen. What's your theory, Zan?
Well, I just, you know, I've seen it happen before as well. It's just, you know, intense exercise. On The Biggest Loser, it happened all the time, didn't it?
Well, why does it happen? Normally, the reason that you vomit is to get rid of stuff from your gut because it's poisonous. And the way that your body knows that it's poisonous is that you are having a disturbance of your senses. So, on one hand, you might have had some poison, you're going, oh, you know, some poisonous food, oh, I'm feeling sick, your vision's going, and so you're vomited up as a protective mechanism. When you don't want it to happen is, for example, when you're on a boat and your vision's going all wibbly-wobbly because the horizon's moving up and down. I think that what's happened in the case of rowing, and I haven't got a good answer for this, I'm making this up as I go along, I think what happens is you push your body so hard that the sensors that feed into your balance sensors, etc., are saying, he's a little bit dizzy here, there's not enough blood here, he's a little bit off balance. And then it kicks in with the ancient reflex of, if your sensors are not picking up the environment properly, you have eaten some poison, and then you vomit as a result of that.
Is there anything to do with lactic acid, the release of lactic acid? Does that cause nausea?
And theory number two might be lactic acid, but I don't know if it causes nausea. I reckon it'd be a multivariate thing, multifactorial. There'd be more than just one cause.
I reckon if we've got trainers or gym instructors, they might know something about
sports,
it. Give us a buzz.
People. They would know.
Thanks for the call, Henry.
Thank you, Dr. Henry. That's a very good question.
See you later.
See you later.
And we've got a few answers about the slick behind boats when they're gone. Not the turbulence, but that little kind of oily slick that follows a boat once it's long since gone.
Which can be curious if there is no oil coming out of the boat, if, for example, it's a rowboat.
What are the answers coming through?
Well, I like this one. Via the passage of the boat, it draws up water from below. The water doesn't have ripples in it. It will get ripples from the wind. The wind will give it ripples, but it needs time, and it hasn't had the time to do that.
Mm.
I like that one. With regard to record players, there are record players, thank you, Mr. Kangaroo, that play records without a needle from a laser so you don't get any damage to the record. With regard to the earphones, if the phone was well isolated except for contact at the ear, it should have the same static potential as the rest of the body. So if you're wearing it in your pocket and your pocket gets a static charge, then that gets transferred and then gets earthed through your ear. I kind of get that one. And the vomiting, we've got a theory that it could be related to adrenaline. That's part two. I like that extra theory as well.
Yeah, adrenaline, a big shot of adrenaline does make you feel sick.
Mm, very happy with all of those.
Okay, thanks very much for all your tweet answers and texting answers as well. Benjamin in Canberra's on the line. G'day, Benjamin.
Good morning. How are you, doctors?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
My question is, when looking at stars, are we looking at an individual body or are we looking at maybe like a galaxy which the cluster of stars forms the one individual we may perceive?
With the naked eye?
With the naked eye.
With the naked eye, you can see only about 1,000 stars, even though there appear to be millions, and they are all individual stars in our galaxy or within a couple of hundred light years of us.
So our eyes not able to see sort of past that light sort of coming in.
The most distant object that you can see with the naked eye is a little fuzzy patch in the sky, the Andromeda Galaxy. That's 2 million light years away. If you have a small telescope, you can pick up a galaxy far, far away as a single spot of light, and then if you get a bigger telescope, you can resolve that into a vague galaxy shape, and then eventually, if you had a really, really good telescope much closer, you could go down to the billions of stars. So in general, you're just seeing individual stars that are relatively close to us in our galaxy.
Thanks for the call, Benjamin.
No problem. Thank you.
See you later. John in Bendigo, good morning.
G'day, how are you?
Good, thanks. You've got a question that I want to know the answer to as well. What is it?
Just wanted to know if you could tell me what's happened to Spitfire, the little grub caterpillar thing type things that you used to see on leaves and stuff. Wonder if they've been killed off by disease or climate change or something.
Yeah, it used to be massive clumps of these.
What are these things?
They're called Spitfires, or at least that's what I used to... Really?
Never.
The house that I grew up in Melbourne, we had a huge gum tree out the front, and at a certain time of year, I forget what month it was, but in one of the seasons, they'd clump together, a huge clump of them all together, and then sometimes they'd fall down and they'd be squirming all around, and they got their name Spitfires because if you angered them, they'd spit like acid at you or something. They were awful.
Would it burn the skin?
No, I don't think it burned the skin. It was just, inherently evil.
How far would they spit? A few millimetres or centimetres?
Not very far. They were just kind of ugly looking, weren't they, John?
Yeah, they weren't very unpleasant.
No.
So if you had your hand fairly close to them, they'd squirt a little liquid onto the back of
your
hand?
If you annoyed them, just like most animals, they react if you annoy them or, are a threat to them. But I haven't seen them in quite a while.
Were the drops roughly the size of the head of a match or smaller?
The drops?
Yeah.
Was it more of a liquid that they spat out, John?
Yeah, like a yellowy liquid.
Mm. Oh, delightful.
They had these red tentacles on the top of their head that used to come up as they got angry.
Now, look, I don't know, definitely. It could be that there's been more urbanisation where you live and therefore more buildings for your trees. It could be climate change. No idea.
Okay.
But it's possible that things are disappearing because of the...
Things are shifting with climate change. And I think it's moving at so many kilometres per decade away from the equator.
All right. We'll see if anybody texts us through before the morning's out. John, thanks for the call.
Thank you, John.
See you later. When are mosquitoes going to die out? That's what I want to know.
Never. They've got a useful purpose, which is to make more mosquitoes.
Katina in Canberra. Good morning.
Hello, Katina.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I was wondering, I've noticed that when you're sleeping with someone in the same bed and if they have their arm or their leg on you, it's fine until they fall asleep and then it feels like it gets heavier. And my boyfriends have always laughed at me, said, of course I'm not getting any heavier, I'm just falling asleep. But I wondered if maybe it was to do with muscles relaxing as your body falls asleep.
Mm.
Look, I don't know. Number one. Number two, it's real. And when you're carrying a child some distance and then they fall asleep, suddenly they appear heavier. The child has not put on an extra 5 kilograms. They still weigh just as much.
It's that dead weight, isn't it?
Yeah, but why does it feel... Look, Katina, it's real and I don't know why. And maybe we need a... I think this would almost be an exercise physiologist to tell us the answer.
If the relaxing of the muscles makes you feel heavier. Or just maybe it's just, the distribution.
More?
Maybe it's the distribution
is
of the weight.
Is that what it is?
Could be.
They're more intimately flowing against you.
Yeah, I wondered if it was to do with when you're awake, maybe you're sort of consciously holding your arm or leg up a bit more so as to not be a dead weight on the other person.
Yeah.
But you can, in the stages before you fall asleep, you just lie, you're not using your muscles to hold your arm up. You're just lying there like a floppy bit of well-boiled spaghetti.
Yeah. Yes. That's an interesting question. We'll see where that weight comes
from.
Damn
good question,
see if we can find out for you. Thanks for the call, Katina.
Not a problem.
See you later.
Bye.
Shane in Brisbane, good morning.
Yeah, g'day.
What's your question?
Yeah, I was just curious on eye colour. Like, why does it change and... Like, why do some people change and other people don't?
Changing over long periods of time, for example, from infancy to adulthood, involves the laying down of extra types of melanin. I don't understand how the eye colour can change once you're an adult, unless you're going to lay down some more melanin. It is rare, but it does occasionally happen, that a person whose hair has gone grey can suddenly start generating colour again, so the dye factory that's built into each hair follicle can switch on again.
Yep.
So presumably the factory that makes in your eye the little bits of melanin makes more. By the way, there's no green, blue or whatever colour melanin you like, it's just black, and the more melanin that you have, it causes the colour via the Rayleigh's law of scattering, fourth power, bending of the wavelength, that sort of stuff. Talking to the people who make the iris recognition technology, they're all 100% convinced that the iris does not change at all.
There you go, Shane. Yeah, maybe it's just the reflection of
ambient light,
and what people are wearing and stuff like that that's making it look like it changes.
Well, it's just like, because I noticed on someone else the other day, and I'm like, oh, well, maybe it's not just me,
Yeah, I don't think it's got no scientific evidence that that actually happens. But thanks for the call.
No, thanks.
See you, Shane.
See ya.
And that's about all the time we have this morning for Dr. Carl. You will be back next Thursday, though, at 11 a.m.
I'll be very happy to be there.
See you soon.